This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We're talking with Lori Gilbertson, former prosecutor, and with Tribeca Blue Consulting, talking about the case against Brian Koberger. A lot of documents dumped in the last week or so that we've been deciphering and going through. A lot of pages, I'll say that. But honestly, with all that we've seen, not a ton of new information. Some reconfirming things that we've already known. Some putting a couple pieces of information into the mix, specifically about some of the red stains and brownish stains that were found on some of his items. We've learned that some of those are, in fact, blood. As far as whose blood they are or DNA, none of that is known as of this moment. When you look at those documents, Lori, and you see some of the more intertwined interworkings that are spoken of in there in terms of the investigation, what stood out to you?
What stands out is that, you know, they did have search warrants executed all over the country. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, two or three different states. What stood out to me was kind of an interesting fact from the search warrant that was executed at his apartment. And I believe this was executed at the time that that Brian Koberger was being apprehended in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And that there were something like 50, 60 blood stains or stains of some sort. And we don't quite know yet whose blood it is or whether it's blood or who it's going to be tied to, mm-hmm. but also just the lack of things that were found. I mean, yeah. That's what really stood out to me, that how careful he must be in the way that he, you know, deals with what could be possibly incriminating evidence. I think that looking at this case, you may say, well, there was nothing found. So they didn't find anything at his apartment. They just have these stains. We don't know what it is. So that is not incriminating. To me, the lack of it is what really stands out, you know, that someone could be, you know, so careful, as we know he was, you know, at the crime scene, to leave so little behind, and then to do the same in his apartment and to leave so little behind. And I guess, Tony, this may be my prosecutor's mind that is so entrenched, but I look at that and say, to me, that is consciousness of guilt, that he has really covered up what he did and done it really, really well, almost professionally.
Yeah.
Covered it up.
It's almost
that stood out quite a bit.
Well, that's interesting, because it's like what's not there is what stands out more. Because for a scene like this, where it's a brutal, bloody, horrible scene. And I'm not trying to be gruesome. Yeah. I'm not going to go into that. Mm-hmm. But it was. And to not have more evidence in places is really kind of shocking. And very surprising that there was not, but it does speak to the mindset and maybe some of the planning and the ability of what he had to cover up some of his tracks. He seemed to be very smart about it in some ways and very dumb about it in others. It almost speaks to someone who is kind of inexperienced at this, but almost wondering, you know, had he been able to get away with this, maybe could have improved in some of those areas and would have turned into a budding serial killer far beyond just this.
Yeah. I mean, what a chilling thought as you said that. You know, when you said he's inexperienced, I was thinking, well, thank goodness he is. And, you know, he wasn't a serial killer yet, as far as we know, but he's, you know, according to the evidence we've seen and what I believe of it, most likely a mass murderer. And yes, we talked a little bit about that with Lori Vallow, but you look how she's out there and talking about this stuff, and you know, it's just so out in the open. But with someone like him, I you just see the calculations of the killing, the planning that went into it, and to be someone who could plan that, calculate it, be so organized in it that you could then brutally murder four people and leave behind just one drop of blood.
I think
is mind-boggling.
the digital footprint that he left obviously is mm-hmm. going to be used very strongly against him in court.
Yes.
And one of those very much speaks to what you were just talking about, the way that the situation, the scene was cleaned up to a certain extent, or at least he didn't have evidence of him being there. That also speaks to the way he tried to kind of clean up his digital footprint as well by turning off the phone during the exact hours that the murder took place. It may, on the surface, if you're inexperienced at this team, well, that's a great idea. Then my phone won't ping by the towers. Okay, great. And you don't think anything more of it. And so you're like, oh shit, my phone's always on and this is the one time it's off. That may raise some red flags.
Right. And I, again, do not mean to make light of this by laughing at all.
Sure.
Because obviously, you know, what would a horrendous, you know, crime and the victims here. And the reason I laughed is because it reminded me of something with one of my kids when I deliberately said, you know, you may not go on Instagram. You may not use Instagram. You're too young. You can't go on it. So what did, you know, my child do? Made an account on Instagram and blocked me so that I couldn't see it.
Might be suspicious. Yes.
Might be suspicious, you know, so it just reminded me of that. Sounds like a good idea, but not really.
Yeah, it's like kind of an elementary move where you'd expect a kid to do something like that.
Right.
And you'd expect an inexperienced murderer to do something like that as well. Very book smart, you know, I guess, as we used to say. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the actual street smarts, not so much. But that also is a reflection of his personality and what we know of it as well. Mm-hmm. So it all really does kind of add up.
It really does. And, you know, we used to say as prosecutors sometime, you know, that often we get questions or the jury, you know, you could tell that there were arguments or the jury might be wondering about some certain things. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to prove that the person who committed the crime was smart in what they did.
Sure.
Or in how they tried to get out of it or how they tried to cover it up, because always they make a mistake and you don't end up in court, you know, facing these charges if you haven't made a mistake in some way. And clearly, you know, he did hear the turning off of the phone, the leaving of the blood. You know, there is always something. And in his case, there were, you know, lots of little somethings physically. But I do remember when, you know, the charging document came out. I don't recall if that was the indictment. I believe, Tony, you read it.
Yeah.
On the air. And that digital footprint there, you know, before they even got to the DNA evidence part of it, mm-hmm. was so chilling in how calculated it was. Mm-hmm. And yet utterly at just how strong that evidence was, that while he thought he may have been, you know, being very clever in so many ways, ultimately, his actions just really very, very clearly showed what he was planning and what he did.
Yeah, very hard to argue that any of that is just a coincidence. If you look at the footprint and the where he actually mm-hmm. went. One more question, yep. and I want your thoughts from a prosecutor's standpoint. We obviously, the media has been asking, please raise the gag order. And I understand the media would want to do that because they mm-hmm. want information. But the other question about that would be the Gonzalez family. Steve obviously has mm-hmm. been one of the more vocal parents in this. Everybody deals with grief differently. I can't say it'd be much different than Steve, I think. Obviously, I've never been in that situation, but I would probably be very vocal knowing myself and probably to a fault. Is it a good idea or a bad idea? I know he wants it lifted as well, at least for the family, so they can speak out prior to the trial. You know, I get emotions are running high. You want justice and you want your voice heard to get it. Is this a good idea, though? Should it be lifted or should they stick with this gag order until everything gets underway?
You know, I think, Tony, you might be surprised at my thoughts on this, mm-hmm. given my background. But, you know, in this case, with so much media attention and the weighing and balancing of the factors with a gag order as to the press's right to, you know, have this information or to get information out or to talk about it. And then as to the victim's family and his right to be able to speak, you know, is really all weighed against being able to have a fair trial, mm-hmm. A fair trial for the defendant, obviously, but also a fair trial for the prosecution. So although it is a very broad gag order, I think ultimately it is going to help them find a fair jury who can try this case. It's going to help that they are able to not have, you know, various witness statements out there, which can be very, honestly, very difficult for the prosecution when all sorts of witnesses start speaking out in the press, and then you've got all sorts of things that can be majorly inconsistent or used at trial against them. And then also for the defense, that this jury pool certainly is not poisoned by anything that comes out in the coverage of a case like this. Mm-hmm. So although it is broad, it does seem to be undertaken with some thought. And while I certainly feel for the family and for them not being able to get out and speak in a way that might be cathartic for them, that time will come. And if the being that the ultimate goal would be to see justice in this case, I think a gag order actually is going to help with that. Although I did not think that at the beginning of the case. And I was a little astounded because honestly, I tried cases for 10 years in New York City, some of them with a lot of press attention, and never had any gag orders, never asked for them, never had defense ask for them. It was just all out there. But I have kind of changed my thinking on this from looking at the case. And I do think it actually would be to the victim's family's benefit to have this. And there will be time for them to speak out later. And they're also most likely going to be witnesses in this case. So it is going to help them as well. Although I think it's probably very, very hard for them to see it that way right now.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Lori Gilbertson, thank you so much for joining us, former prosecutor and with Tribeca Blue Consulting. Always appreciate having you on the air. Hey, if you like the podcast, you want access to all of our episodes in their entirety and ad-free, all you got to do is sign up to become a supporter of our program through Apple Podcasts. Yes. If you're there already, just go there. Do the premium subscription option and you'll get access to everything. No ads. Yes. And get access to all of our podcasts just like that under our umbrella. So do check that out on Apple Podcasts. Even try it out for 3 days free. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.